You're listening to The Bill Murphy Show, the music interview show featuring the best in the business. From behind the scenes, in the studio, and on the stage. Available by subscription for free on iTunes and at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And now, here's your new digital broadcast for this Wednesday, February 1st, a new month upon us, and a brand new show posted for you at BillMurphyShow.com. You may be listening via iTunes on your subscription. If you are, visit the page, visit our sponsors, and also read more information on the artists that you're listening to. Unfortunately, the iTunes subscription is audio only. You don't really get that full description, but you get the full experience at BillMurphyShow.com. And this episode brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack, world-famous gigantic fishbowl drinks, fresh Florida seafood, and live music. Lots of it this weekend on A1A in Fort Lauderdale Beach. They'll have shindigs on Friday night, stereo burn Saturday night. And if you're looking for a very cool beachside place to watch a Super Bowl, that's the place to be. Everything's HD, tons of TVs, and a good party atmosphere. Also, Satchmo, home of live music there on Commercial Boulevard between Bayview and US 1. This weekend, they'll have the Pat DeLeon Trio on Friday, and then Maria Rivas on Saturday night. That's at Satchmo. Go by and say hi and see this great live venue that Fort Lauderdale has needed for a long, long time. And I welcome in another singer-songwriter for us today who should be a quite entertaining guest. Also want to let you know that he will be performing this weekend. And a concert, very intimate concert at American Heritage, Saturday night, 7 o'clock. You can find out details about this and other concerts there at ahconcerts.com. Very cool that American Heritage does that. That's in Plantation, right on Broward Boulevard, right down the street from our studio. Our guest for today has been doing music for several decades. His first official release was in 1987. It was called The Night Shift Watchman. His most recent, and if I'm counting correctly, right around 17 or 18 albums later, is called Reverie, and that's on his own What Are Records label. Also, a brand new download only called Mixtape 79 through 82. David Wilcox joins us. Thanks for joining me such short notice today, David.
My pleasure. Hi.
Let me catch my breath after that long intro. Well, we're going to welcome you to the Plantation area. What is your connection with this area down here, and why do we have the privilege of seeing you in the auditorium at American Heritage? What a great location that is.
Well, it's always a treat to get warm in the middle of February, so I'm
there you go.
Come down to the sunshine.
Smart booking. Get me in Florida January or February, and I'll be fine. Okay. And then, also wanted to mention, you're going to be at Eddie's Attic. What a cool venue that is in Atlanta on February 18th and 19th. You're calling me from where? In the Carolinas somewhere?
I live in Asheville, North Carolina.
And you're based there and grew up there, and that's where all your roots are? Or?
I grew up in Northeast Ohio, but I got to Asheville as soon as I could. I went to college there and stayed on because there was a really great little music place that was just perfect for me. And then little by little, you know, I got better, more reliable vehicles, and my circle of travel widened, and gradually I started playing, you know, Nashville and Chapel Hill, and then got a record deal, and that's when the A&M stuff came out, three records on A&M, and that was really fun because I got to go to towns that I'd never been to, and my music had gotten there first.
Asheville is an underappreciated music town, is it not? I have heard about it before.
Asheville has a great music scene, but the thing that was wonderful about being a local musician here was that it wasn't an industry town at all. So in industry towns, you have to pay to play. And in Asheville, you could make a living as a local musician, and it was a great place to come up.
Plus, people just mistake it for Nashville and just show up there, right?
Well, you do have to be a little clear with your enunciating. People say, oh, you're from Nashville.
So, would it be fair to categorize your music as folk because of how much storytelling it does?
I think that's a great term as long as you define it, because like a lot of music terms, it can mean so many things. But, you know, because folk was the name for an era of almost sort of popular music, I
right,
guess.
Right, right.
And so there's also the notion of folk being sort of anti-industry music, and, mm-hmm. you know, there's other names for that, too. But my feeling about the categories of music is that it's not so much like a style thing, sort of like a fashion, but it's more like, what's your intent? Are you trying to please the industry? Are you trying to just sort of find your tribe? Are you sort of speaking the words that will make you sane night by night? That's sort of my mission musically, is to song by song sort of sing myself into a better state of mind, a better way of seeing this life that I have.
Sanity preservation music.
Yes.
Yeah. I like it. iTunes probably should take note of that and add that to their hundreds of categories.
You know, on my website, there's this quirky little thing on the music page that's called Medicine Music. And instead of listing the songs chronologically by what album they're on, they're listed sort of categorically by emotion. So depending on what you've been going through, you can find a song that's just the right medicine for, you know, what you've been going through, what you've been dreaming about, what you've been angry about, whatever. And the categories get very specific.
Yeah. And you know, it's really no joke. There really is a lot to the healing power of music. And in fact, one of my goals in the coming year and my upcoming shows is to get more of those people that are, you know, more scientifically aware of that, because it is true. Music is being used to literally heal people.
I love that. There's so much that we come for music. We come to music not just for the sound of it. Obviously, we can hear that at home. But there is something that happens with the sort of emotional momentum of a crowd that agrees to kind of let this song kind of focus us for a moment. And
yep.
And it stirs up this wonderful thing that happens with the people in the audience really inspiring the musician, and the musician reflecting back, you know, to the crowd. It's really a cool thing that happens. It's miraculous.
Yeah, when it can physically move you and just change your state of being, it's doing quite a service. Now let's trace back your roots and your what led you to where you are, like 16, 17 releases later. You got DavidWilcox.com. People can spend an entire day there just listening to samples, reading lyrics, looking at all the artwork, downloading music if they'd like. You're even giving away some of it on your site as well. Where did this all begin? Your earliest childhood memory of holding an instrument in your hand or singing a note and going, I think I like music.
Well, the part that really changed my life was first year of college, when I was hearing the sound of an acoustic guitar in the stairwell at the end of the dorm, that concrete stairwell that echoed so beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a song that a friend back home had been trying to play. I'd never played guitar, but I always loved the sound of it. And my friend Scott was trying to figure out this song, Buckets of Rain, an old Bob Dylan song. So after I had heard this woman play it, I said, hey, can you write down the chords for that? There's this friend of mine that wants to learn it. And she said, well, it's in open tuning. I said, what's that? She said, well, the chord patterns aren't the same, so I can't write it down, but I could show you. I said, I don't play guitar. She said, well, just remember where the fingers go, and you can show him. I said, okay. But it was going to be, you know, a bunch of weeks till Thanksgiving break, so
right.
I didn't want to forget. Well, I was just putting my fingers on the guitar and listening to it. You know, I wasn't a guitar player. I wasn't playing it. I was just listening. And that was my way of letting myself do it, because for some reason I had thought, you know, this is something you should leave to the professionals. I'm not a musician. But the sound was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And by the time I went home for Thanksgiving break, you know, I took out this borrowed guitar, because I didn't own a guitar. I borrowed one from somebody at college. And I brought it out, and I played the song for my friend Scott, and he was looking at me like I'd taken something away from him. And I was trying to, you know, give him something. And he was looking at me like I was a guitar player. I realized that I was.
Right, right. You're not just listening to your fingers touch the string. That equals being a guitar player.
Yeah.
And so open tuning was your first introduction to acoustic guitar. That's interesting. That kind of quickly expanded your horizons.
Regular tuning was about the fifth or sixth tuning I learned.
Wow.
I learned a lot of Joni Mitchell songs, you know, a lot of interesting sort of Ry Cooder kind of stuff and the slack key stuff. And it was fascinating. It was all just wide open. And
I'm curious to know, some of the first songs you learned, were you learning them on an open tuning when, in fact, those songs were probably easier to play in regular tuning?
No, actually, I just learned songs that were in open tuning. I had an ear for picking them out.
Wow, cool.
Learned them off the record.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And what was the specific open tuning you were using? The Gagdad tuning?
I started with the regular open D, which is D-A-D, F-sharp, A-D.
Okay.
And that was, you know, the Buckets of Rain song. That whole Blood on the Tracks record is in open D.
Right.
Or a lot of Joni Mitchell songs in that tuning, and it just got me going.
Oh, it's fantastic stuff. Well, we're going to be able to see you here in the Fort Lauderdale area, Plantation American Heritage. You know, it was till somebody brought it to my attention, our mutual friend, Corey Lessner, Dr. Corey Lessner over at Millennium Laser Eye Centers, who happens to be a friend of yours. You also did some stuff for them. Were you the guy that did the jingle for them?
I did.
Right. That's what I thought.
Well, it's because I'm so grateful, because when I was down doing a concert, Corey said, have you ever thought about LASIK? You know, you might want to check it out. And, you know, at that point, I was, you know, having to use reading glasses, and that was fine for reading. But when you're trying to, like, work on something, you know, it was just such a pain. So I wound up having LASIK with Corey, and every day it is just an absolute joy.
Well, I did too, and this is turning into a pretty cool live commercial for him. But
yes.
but the thing is, so it's not really fair to call it a jingle. It was really an homage to
it. It was a sincere gratitude sort of a song. It was. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome stuff. Did you get the full blown both eyes done?
I did. Like 4 seconds in one eye and 7 seconds in the other.
Yeah, I did the monovision, so we can speak from both the procedures and say that all is well and we can see beautifully.
Yes, it's a great thing.
This episode brought to you by Millennium Laser Eye Centers. Anyway, no, we're happy to do it, but I didn't even, until he brought it to my attention with your show this weekend, I never realized that American Heritage put on concerts. They didn't do that kind of thing when I was in school, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And so have you been there before and played there before?
I have, yeah. It's a beautiful hall.
Wow, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So this happens at 7 o'clock Saturday night. That's February 4th, ahconcerts.com. If you want to get tickets or just show up, I'm sure you can get in there and see it at the beautiful American Heritage School on Broward Boulevard in West Plantation. Now let's play one of your songs. I'm going to go back, play something old and something new for the show. Let's go back and tell me a little bit about this song, Eye of the Hurricane. Take me back to when you put this thing together and what record it was on and all that and how it came to be.
Eye of the Hurricane came from a near miss on a fast motorcycle that really woke me up and made me realize how close I came to killing myself. I combined my story with two other stories, a friend of a friend who died on a fast Ducati.
Mm.
And I distilled the songs into one, and then I realized that it would be just a whole lot more interesting if I made the character a woman, because instead of it just being some brainless guy who loves to go fast for the thrill, it probably has some deeper psychological meaning.
Of
you know?
Course it does.
So I found this amazing riff in open C, and it just started speaking to me, and the song became the tones of addiction.
Excellent. Well, let's see what kind of meaning our listeners put into this one. Eye of the Hurricane. David Wilcox on the show today.
Tank is full, the switch is on, night is warm, cops are gone, rocket bike is all her own. Called a hurricane. She told me once it's quite a ride. It's shaped so there's this place inside where if you're moving, you can hide safe within the rain. She wants to run away, but there's nowhere that she can go. Nowhere the pain won't come again. But she can hide, hide in the pouring rain. She rides the eye of the hurricane. Tell the truth, explain to me how you got this need for speed. She laughed and said it might just be the next best thing to love. Hope is gone, and she confessed that when you lay your dream to rest, you can get what's second best, but it's hard to get enough. She wants to run away. There's nowhere that she can go. Nowhere the pain won't come again. But she can hide, hide in the pouring rain. She rides eye of the hurricane. We saw her ride so fast last night, racing by in a flash of light, riding quick. The street was dark. The shiny truck she thought was parked had blocked her path, stopped her heart, but not the hurricane. She saw her chance to slip the trap. There's just the room to pass and back, but then it moved, closed the gap. She never felt the pain. She wants to run away, but there's nowhere that she can go. Nowhere the pain won't come again. But she can hide, hide in the pouring rain. She rides eye of the hurricane. She rides the eye of the hurricane.
Eye of the Hurricane from David Wilcox on the Bill Murphy Show. David joins us from Asheville, North Carolina, to share his music with us and some of the stories behind him, behind them. That's beautiful. And you know, it's vaguely familiar, and at the same time, it just became an instant, ooh, I need to listen to that one a whole lot more track for me, so I really appreciate it. You know, it comes from so many places, and there's so much influence in there that I can hear that I appreciate, and I mean, I feel like I instantly relate to a lot of that piece of music with you instantly. So real good stuff.
Thank you.
And you seem to have a little bit of a recurring theme in your music where you get into the there's a lot to do with travel and lots of places all over the world. There's songs that have titles about places in them, places that you haven't been, places that you have been. When did travel become such an integral part of your songwriting?
I think it's always been there, and I think that I was, you know, in love with travel before music, and I'm really grateful that I do consider myself a traveler first and a musician second, really, because, you know, if you're not in love with travel, this is not a good job to be in.
Right, and at the same time, I was going to say, did it occur to you when you were getting into music that that might be an excellent vehicle for you to do a lot of traveling, so that way they're tied in nicely?
Yeah, I think it does serve. When I was just traveling, you know, before music, I was traveling mostly by bicycle all over Europe, and I used to lead bike trips in the summer to afford to travel the rest of the year.
Mm.
And, it was a great time, and yet I really wished I could give something back, offer something, and leave more than just little tracks in the sand. So I had a real desire to, you know, have some kind of creative thing that I could do, and I'm grateful that music has been that.
Now, you've got hundreds, and I would think that since you have so many pieces of work and have done so many releases that you probably have hundreds, if not thousands, of songs stockpiled. And I wonder if, and you seem to be someone who really just does this for his own soul's satisfaction, but did you get into the whole songwriting mechanism, the whole machine of you know, a publisher writing songs for other artists and having deadlines and amounts of songs to do? Did it become ever tedious work like that for you?
It's wild. I wish that I had had the connections or the talent to write for other people. I never have. And there have been a few people who've covered my songs. Katie Lang covered one that I called Chet Baker's Unsung Swan Song, and she called it My Old Addiction. Hmm. And she did a great version of it. But mostly, I write the songs that I need to hear. And it's weird that, you know, there's friends of mine who kind of try and give me a compliment and say, well, Dave, you know, you don't write those pop jingles. You write this really deep kind of thing, and it's because you have such integrity. And I said, no, it's actually just because I don't know how to write pop jingles.
Well, you probably have more integrity than you're giving yourself credit for, because, you know, you get into that machine and then you become, you know, like a machine for a songwriter, a publisher, have a purpose, and you have to do it under certain guidelines. That may have tainted some of that integrity for you.
It may be that, you know, there are friends of mine that have great publishing deals, and they love to write all day, you know, and write three songs a day, and that is a great discipline, and I love to have the kind of chops that come with that kind of practice.
You and me both. I would love that. Right.
It's a beautiful craft, and so I do love the craft of it, and yet I think what's been most important to me is, you know, I got into music because of the way songs made me feel, and I wanted that feeling not just in the song. I wanted it in my life. So what's more important to me than just writing another song is finding a way to use the song as my sort of guidance, my little radar, my compass for how to find the issues, the story, the whatever it is that I that keeps me from really being alive and knowing it. And so I've tended to just follow the heart of it more than the craft of it.
Right. Excellent. And also in the structure, in the, what I should say, the construction of your music, it seems like you just really want to capture, it's as bare bones as possible. And I would imagine that's to just keep that raw emotion that was there when you wrote the song and you first started hearing your creation. You just want to keep that integrity together by just making it the singer and the guitar and not really elaborate on that too much.
I've tried it lots of ways. There are some records that are more produced, and there are times when, you know, I've had the chance to have great complex orchestrations.
Right.
And I keep listening to it and asking myself, you know, does it feel more intense? Does it bring the emotion, you know, closer? And usually, if I can really get a compelling performance of it, voice and guitar, it's pretty hard to top that for
me. Right.
And I think it's because the kind of lyrics that I write, you have to really concentrate on them. There can't be a lot of other stuff going on.
That's a good point. That is a good point, because sometimes, you know, over-instrumentation can be a distraction. But, you know, that could lead to another two-hour conversation for you and I. I could really get into that in detail. But sort of on that note, as you talk about listening to your lyrics, I want to play another one here. And not only is it, you know, relevant for today, but it's also, you know, tied in with Eye of the Hurricane earlier. Kind of gives everybody a bookends your career nicely about, you know, how it began the perspective you were writing from with Eye of the Hurricane and what you're doing with this one called End of the World Again, one of your more recent tracks. I listened to this one, really enjoyed it, and I want to share it on the show here. Talk a little bit about this one. I already know it has some references to the Mayan calendar and whatnot.
Well, mostly the song is just cautioning against giving up.
Right.
And there are people who use the excuse of some sort of end of the world just to keep themselves from doing the work so that they can see all the tragedy, all that's wrong, but not look at life as just a series of bad events, but look at it as an adventure and give themselves a sense of dignity about this life they have.
End of the world again. Got my ticket early and I'm standing in line. It's the end of the world again. Everybody's certain of it one more time. Tell me about the calendar the Mayans figured out before they all disappeared in mystery. They didn't have a future, but it seems we have no doubt. They knew the punchline of our history. It's the end of the world again. Got my ticket early and I'm standing in line. It's the end of the world again. Everybody's certain of it one more time. Accurate predictions all indicate our doom. Things that eluded our detection. It'll be an age of truth and beauty, or at least a big kabloom. 45 days past the election, after the warning, here comes the morning. Just a life of earthly bliss. Sun keeps burning, world keeps turning. We just can't go on like this. All that evolution since we crawled out of the slime, I'm grateful for everything that made me. But if this is just as high as we are ever gonna climb, then I'll just sit back and be lazy, 'cause it's the end of the world again. Got my ticket early and I'm standing in line. It's the end of the world again. Everybody's certain of it one more time.
David Wilcox, The End of the World Again, on The Bill Murphy Show. Very, very nice. Now, it's you're borderline satirical, yet you're a serious singer-songwriter. So did you ever have to kind of walk a balancing act between, okay, am I going to be very funny and satirical and kind of novelty, or do I want to be taken seriously as a singer-songwriter telling serious stories and covering serious subject matter?
I think my favorite thing about this kind of music is that in a night of music, you can really get to know someone. You can get to know not only what pisses them off and what they love to make fun of, but you can get to know what they actually are willing to stand for.
Right.
And get to know where they find their hope and what they really love. And I think the combination is crucial, because if you're just singing what you aspire to, what you love and what you're looking forward to and all hopeful and everything, it's kind of hard to believe.
Right, right.
You have to show your hand. You have to say, you know, I'm not happy all the time. This is what gets me. And so I think the satirical songs, if they're well-crafted and they're funny, they can really open up the sense of humor, what we have in common, and the fact that, yeah, there are some songs of truth and beauty, but there's also songs of, yeah, there's a lot of junk that's wrong in the world.
Yeah, and you can flavor something with humor like that song there, End of the World Again, and yet kind of still drive home a nice message, because really, you're right about that. I mean, there's a lot of people that could possibly be using the excuse, oh, well, world's going to end next December anyway. I don't have to accomplish anything right now. So, I mean, if in case anybody's really doing that, there's a message there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's excellent stuff. David Wilcox, this is, you know, and you talk about getting to know somebody. This is, I feel like I've been listening to you for years after just speaking to you for this 25 minutes or so, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, too. And I love that the music can do that. It's sort of a break in the fence. Normally, we feel like strangers, but music is that place where we can sneak through and, you know, see the world through someone else's eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And convene with each other regardless of what we've done up to that point. You know, it's really, really cool. And I have no excuse to not be there at this show Saturday night. So I will hopefully get to meet you in person.
Great.
7 p.m. at American Heritage, ahconcerts.com. American Heritage School is on Broward Boulevard between, Flamingo and Hiatus-ish over there. And you can catch David there 7 p.m. Saturday night. If you're in the Georgia area or northern Florida, catch him at Eddie's Attic, Atlanta, February 18th and 19th. A great venue there. Great time here. Good music. And really, really nice talking to you and meeting you, David.
Thank you much, and thanks for doing this thing you do. It's great that you introduce people to all kinds of great music they haven't heard.
It's a no-brainer for me. Like, it takes to me like, you know, playing the songs to satisfy yourself does for you. So I get the same kind of thrill out of it. I really appreciate it. Hang on 1 second. We'll say goodbye. We wrap things up here by telling everybody thank you again for listening to our last few shows. We're really, really hugely hit, if I'm even being grammatically correct there. So continue to like and share and check in with us at BillMurphyShow.com. Again, if you have an artist that you want to bring to my attention, or if you want to be on the show, you got some songs you want to show off, get in touch with me at Murph@BillMurphyShow.com and we'll get you on. Thanks again, everybody. Catch you next time.
Subscribe to the Bill Murphy Show podcast for free at iTunes. You can post comments about today's show, listen to archived episodes, and like the show on Facebook by visiting BillMurphyShow.com. A presentation of Bill Murphy Productions.